accession number 28500, reel 3.
You know, they had in the battlefield, they had the, like our carriers, or armoured carriers, with plywood and that. And that was their tanks supposed to be and everything. And he didn't believe that. He thought there's something fishy going on here. So after he'd finished, instead of coming back home, he took a walk through Germany. And on various occasions he came on the real tanks and the big buildings that the Express had mentioned in their captions. And he could see, you know, that we were being completely deceived by the Germans. So when he came back, of course, he put it to the to the hierarchy at the time. Of course, it was poor old Chamberlain, you see. He was no good. And he stated his case, and nobody believed him. He said, oh, no, that's foolish rumours. That you should be very careful what you say there, you see. There's no proof that that is happening. But he was quite right. That was Lord Ironside. And that came out in his diaries afterwards, you see, because he kept a copy of that, what he had written to the ministry and so forth. But they poo-pooed it, thought it was all wrong. So of course, we were caught unawares.
And what were your feelings on reading an article like that in the Daily Express? How did you feel?
Well, I felt personally that there must be something somewhere, there's something funny going on somewhere, otherwise that kind of thing wouldn't be coming out the way it is. And then after Lord Ironside's speech, I thought, well, it's quite obvious something's wrong somewhere. And then poor old Prime Minister Chamberlain, you see, well, he went out to see Hitler and came back with that. And I can remember that as fine as on a Sunday when he stood there on a piece of paper and this is peace in our time. I thought, oh my God. You know, this is dreadful, this absolute rubbish, nonsense. And of course it was. I mean, he was completely out of touch with what was going on. And then of course, when old Churchill came on the scene, you see, he spoke things up a bit and got things moving. But if it hadn't been for that, I don't know where we would have been, quite honestly.
And the Lord Ironside, did you hear his speech?
I only read his speech. I read it in one of the papers, and it was quite obvious that he was speaking from what he had seen, and that there was something wrong somewhere. And of course it all came out later on that what he had said and what he had seen was right. But the Daily Express was the only one that I remember vividly seeing the caption in the papers. And that was poo-pooed too by the government. Said, oh no, it's rumours, just rumours.
And Chamberlain's Peace in Our Time, whereabout did you see that?
Oh, that was at Huntley. And it was on the screen. We had a television of a kind, a very small thing, and very distorted. But he came on, and I always remember the paper fluttering and that, and Peace in Our Time. I thought, oh my God, you know, things are definitely going down. You know, and of course, that's what happened.
And to have a television at that time must have been quite exceptional, was it?
Oh, it was. And people were beginning to doubt. You know, as each month went on, there was other articles appearing, you see, saying that this was happening and that was happening. Then, of course, we got Czechoslovakia and we got the rest of them. And then we got the moving into the area in France. Yeah. So it was quite obvious, but they should have seen that a long time ago.
Okay. But to have a television, you had a television in Huntley, did you?
Yes, we had one. It was in the, where was it? No. It was in the big house. Very small, I remember, very small one and very distorted. I mean, very poor picture. And I never forgot that. I always remember that. And then when it appeared in the papers, the whole thing about what had been said and what had been done, I thought, well, we're obviously in trouble here, definitely.
And were you allowed to watch this television in the big house?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I should. because they thought it was a great thing. You see, it was the only one there. all the other houses had radios, but no television. No. But it was good. No.
And can you remember when war was declared? Remember where you were?
I was in Huntley at the time, and it was a Sunday. I always remember it was a Sunday, and the caption appeared again, saying that he hadn't received a reply from Hitler, and that therefore we have to consider that we are at war with Germany. So that made it quite clear that we were in the soup now, right enough.
And what were your thoughts when you heard that?
Definitely, this is it. What the headmaster had said had all come true, you see. If they'd only listened to people like that, you see, a lot of things would never have happened, probably. No.
And at that point, had you any thoughts of how long this war would last for?
No. I didn't, because I thought... Nobody seems to know what is actually happening, what is going on until the fighting started, until the invasion of Czechoslovakia, and that became quite obvious that it was going to be war, whether we liked it or not. But how long it would go on, no. And then, of course, we got that caption to be over and finished by Christmas. I wasn't quite sure that was right. No. Not getting the stories through and the strength of the German army and everything else too, and the Air Force, which all came to light. So it was quite obvious that we were living in a different world altogether to what was going on.
So that was the September, and you joined up in the March.
March, yeah.
Had you any thoughts of going to any of the other services, like the RAF or the... See or anything?
No, with being in Huntley and the Gordons, the TA, and the 6th Gordons in Huntley, which is the headquarters, there, I thought the Gordons was the best. And having gone down and seen a sergeant major, and he says, "Come back when you get there, and we'll take you in." So I thought, no, the Gordons it must be. But when I came home, I spoke to my mother, and she said, "Oh, you just hold on to see what's happening, you know, and see what's going to happen." I said, "Well, but I'm going to go into Gordon Barracks and I'm going to join up and see." So I got that blessing, yes, and off I set and went in. And that started me in my army career.
And you spoke about your mother there. Did you get home from Huntley quite often to see your mother?
Oh yes, I could got the train from the Huntley into Aberdeen, and then the bus from Aberdeen out to Charleston. Yes, I got home quite often. Yep, I did. And at Christmas time, got a present from Lady Davidson, and also something to take home to my mother too. So I just showed you. You see, she was quite a lady. She was. I could see that. She's a genuine article.
And with working on the estate as well, did you ever hear how Lady Davidson felt about the war starting, you know, once war was declared?
Oh, well, both were convinced that war was coming. Oh, both of them. And, of course, in 1938-39, the one in the artillery, he was preparing... And they were organising then and getting the army built, getting their part of the world built up for the war coming. So it was quite obvious it was coming.
And once war had started after the September 1939, was there any changes that you noticed in Huntley? Were any of the Gordons there, any more of the Gordons, the regular army?
Oh, they mobilised, you see, very quickly. And But then they went down to Aldershot, and then from Aldershot they went to France. So we lost them all together then, you see. But the TA part of Huntley was still going on, mean, I could have joined there if I'd, I could have gone and joined there. And I thought, no, what I'll do is I'll go to the headquarters, to Gordon Barracks, and join there instead and see what happens from there. But I didn't think at the time, you know, about being an instructor in the army. I didn't think that. Of course, by going to Gordon Barracks, it gave me that opportunity of being instructing early and getting promotion early too. So I did the right thing, but I didn't realise it at the time.
And by deciding on that date, which I believe was the 18th of March, 1940,
yes.
Did you have to give notice to Lady Davidson?
No. Well, I told her I was going to join up, you see. I told her that, and she said, but she said, you should just hold on, and she said, see how things are going. She said, my son keeps in touch with me and lets me know what's happening, you see. And I said, I'm making my mind up, but I want to go and do my bit. And so she could see that they're going to be in. And she said, good luck. Take care. That's what the last thing she said to me until I saw her again in 1942, 2 years later.
So did you not have to give notice that you were leaving?
Oh, well, I told her I was leaving, you see, and she said, are you going to join up at locally? I said, no. I said, I'm going home, and I will decide when I get home and see the family. And then my intention is to join at Gordon Barracks, you see. Whether I do that or not, I'm not quite sure, but that's what I hope to do. And, of course, that's what happened.
And were you at home long before you decided to go across?
No, I was just home about a month before I went into Gordon Barracks. It was March, February, yes. I came back in February, and there I was in Gordon Barracks in March. Yep.
And what did you do in that month that you were at home? Did you work or anything? Or?
Well, I think it was the first time that I really rested, you know. I thought, well, I've had quite a time this last couple of years, and lots of things to do in that. So I rested and helped at home, and then they decided to go in and join. Of course, we were getting different stories by that time too, what was happening. You know, things weren't looking too well, and things were going wrong. So it became a matter of urgency, really, to get started and get into the army. And so that's what we did.
And if you hadn't joined then, when would your call-up have been if you hadn't joined enough?
Oh, well, I would have probably been called up sometime not long after that, you know. I'm quite sure I would have been. 40, 41, yes. Probably I'd have been called up in April, May. No. But I didn't know what was happening in that respect. And we were always waiting for something to happen, you know, and we would be told to do this or do that, but nothing happened. So I decided to do what I did then in March. And very glad I did too.
Good afternoon. This is the second session of recordings with Mr. McCarty. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
Mr. McCarty, the last time we stopped, we were still discussing basic training.
Yeah.
And one of the areas that we didn't speak about was kit inspections.
Mm-hmm.
Would you please tell us a bit about kit inspections, please, during basic training?
Yes. Well, kit inspections, of course, were always important in the army for a simple reason. It made sure that the soldiers were looking after their clothing and their kits and everything else, and we had a certain method of displaying the kit out. It was laid out, and it's usually on a Saturday morning, usually. That was the first thing that happened. And the kits were laid out on the beds, and we checked everything that was there to make sure that they had a full kit. And we explained to them how to fold it and they put it in its place and so forth. And this made sure that we were checking on their kits and ensuring that they had a full scale of equipment. That was the main reason for the kit inspection.
But whilst you were doing your basic training, can you remember being inspected as a young man in 1940? Can you remember your kit inspection?
Oh, yes. Well, it's rather funny because in all my early service, I only made one kit inspection. And probably it was done because I took great care of my kit and the laying out and that. And I was never asked to do it again. So I got away with that. I only did one kit inspection when I joined up as a soldier in the Guard Islanders. And that was probably the reason, because I took such pride in my kit and that, that I was never asked again to do another kit inspection. So I just had to do one.
What about the rest of the room that you were?
Oh, well, they had to do it regularly, you see. It was an every Saturday morning business where they all had to lay out their kits, but I was exempt from that. That's the only thing I can think of, because I had done such a good job of laying out my kit and being able to explain it that I was never asked again to do it.
So what did you do when they were having
a kit inspection? Then a short time later, of course, I was in charge of kits and doing that with the rest of them, so that it was a quick change from my one kit inspection to coming to instruct and train all the recruits to how to lay their kits and what to do and keep a check of all everything that they had in their possession.
And did someone show you within the regiment how to do your kit inspection?
Oh yes. I was shown, was a lance corporal. I've got a photograph of him there, and he showed me how to lay out my kit, and I went and laid it out, and then they came back to inspect it, and after that I was never asked to lay another kit. So it was quite funny, because I was expecting to be every Saturday morning during our recruit training to have to lay kit, but I was exempt from it. So, and the one thing they did do was, because we were so short of instructors, as we just had a sergeant major and a lance corporal in the platoon, and they were short, that they started me telling me how to instruct. So I started off very early being able to instruct, and went on instructing till the middle of 1942 as a staff instructor. But I enjoyed it was good.
So were you still doing your basic training when you actually started to instruct?
Yes. I started instructing when I was still on my basic 6 weeks training. Yeah.
And so whilst you were training, you were also instructing?
I was also instructing, yes. And it was good in a way, because it encouraged you to pay attention, to instructing and having a good memory when you were drilling or map reading or first aid or whatever it was, that you were able to explain to them what was required. And as each month went on, of course I got better and better, and I never looked back on it. I was kept as a staff instructor right up to the middle of 1942. So I had 2 years of instructing at the Gordon Barracks.
So did that mean that you were exempt from quite a lot of the basic training, even although you were going through basic training?
Yes, I was exempt of a lot. For a simple reason, I believe it was, because we didn't have NCOs, we didn't have instructors. There was such a shortage at that time. And that was probably why I was brought into it so quickly, during my recruit training. And for the simple reason that we didn't have the instructors to teach. And of course it helped me tremendously, because I then made sure that I was going to do a good job in instructing. And I enjoyed every moment of it, because I'll tell you why. When your recruits came in each month to the barracks, they hadn't a clue how to drill or to do anything. And by the time you had finished with them after 6 weeks, you couldn't believe it. It was the same people. That was a great joy. That was a great joy, being able to see what happened when you were teaching and training them, and they finished up fairly good soldiers, and they came in with no knowledge, nothing, and it was good to see such a quick change. And there's some wonderful characters too. Oh yes, most amazing.
It was 6 weeks, the length of the basic training in 1940.
That's right, 6 weeks basic training. And then they went on to be posted to the different battalions or whatever happened to them. They were posted away from that. One or two were retained as instructors to keep the ball rolling, but the majority all went away, posted to different units. And it was rather a short time that you knew them. You got to know them personally, and then they just disappeared. Then the next batch came in, and the whole thing started over again. It was never ending. Never ended. In 1940, 41, and 42, there was a tremendous amount of recruits came in, and then gradually it tapered away as the years went on. 40, 43, 44, you know, not nearly so many people coming in. But in the beginning, of course, was just a steady flow of recruits coming in to be trained.
And why do you think that you took to it so well, that they made you an instructor so quickly? Why do you think?
Well, I took to the army the moment I was in. I didn't mind the discipline. I didn't mind being ordered about or that. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed doing that. And then I thought, well, it's my duty, being taught in the short time that I was there with them, to then impart what knowledge I had onto the other ones so that they could come through life fairly reasonably well and finish off the recruit training, you know, feeling much better, much fitter, and ready to go forth to the battalions. So it was a question simply of, you saw the results. You saw what happened if you put your mind into it to train them, and in a short time the changes were so obvious, you know. It was good.
And you spoke about the discipline, that you took to the discipline quite well.
Yes, I had no problem with discipline. No. It just seemed to suit me. I don't know why, but it seemed to suit me, and I enjoyed it. Yeah.
And whilst you were in this basic training, you know, whilst you were just at this stage where you're still in your 6 weeks training, but you're also an instructor.
Yeah.
Were you getting any anything extra granted to you by being an instructor? You know, were you getting special privileges or anything?
Oh, yes. When you became a staff instructor, when you were included in the staff and became a staff instructor, you got quite a lot of different privileges, you know, which were good. There weren't many, but there were, it just was that little bit different from the rest. You know, like, you could get maybe a half day off sometime, or you could get a weekend off, put a pass in and get a weekend off, and that was quite good. And they did look after you. I must say, the officers at that time were very, very good. They were, yeah. But I feel that with all the young people coming in at that time, and together from all parts of the world. We were getting them from South Africa, they were coming from Argentina, they were coming from different places. And it was wonderful to see that, you know, you had people there who had come a long distance to join. You know, it was most amazing. And it was good. And it was a great friendship too. And it was really good. I'll give you another little story about kits and the kit inspections. When you were doing your recruit training, you had to form up as a squad, you know, to do training at night and through the day. And you'd all be lined up. The officer would come and inspect a lot. And what they did to encourage people to turn out well, what they called a stick man, holding a baton stick. And the purpose of that was this: where you got turned out in well, and you were smart and tidy, you were omitted from having to do the duties that were implied during the night. In other words, you know, on guard and 2 hours on guard, 4 hours off. You were excused that as a stick man. And one of the most amazing incidents I had with that was on this particular day, we were all lined up, and the officer finished up by taking me out and taking another chap out, Dick by name, the two of us out, to be inspected for able to hold the stick, to take the stick. Well, it was a most amazing experience because they couldn't find any fault with either of us as far as the dress and everything else was saying. So they said, like, take off your equipment. So we did take off our equipment and lay it down, and then take off your tunic. Off came the tunic. Well, underneath, I had my regimental braces, the shoe, on, but Dick, who was an old soldier, had civilian ones on. So he was eliminated, and I was made the stick man. And things like that has happened, you know, which caused a lot of laughs at the time. And you could see the fun that was in it too, you know, taking it away from the seriousness of the various things you had to do. And I got the stick for the simple reason that I was wearing my issue braces. And that wouldn't have been discovered until they had to take the tunics off and be inspected. But that was good. Well, there again, I only did one guard after that. I was excused guards after from that day onward, and never had to do a guard again, even up to my 6 weeks training. So it was there was little compensations for if you were prepared to do your best to turn yourself out tidy, you know, at all times. So it's good. I enjoyed it.
You mentioned a squad there. How many would have been in the squad that you're speaking about?
Doing the guard, probably about a dozen altogether. And that was duties during the night. You see, you'd be two hours on, 4 hours off, or whatever it was, throughout the whole of the night. And you'd certain parts of the barracks to guard. Each guard had its own area to deal with, just as a means of during the hours of darkness and that one in the barracks.
Was that what would be termed guard duties?
Guard duties, that was it, yeah.
And was it normally just during the night that you got guard duties?
Well, it was all worked out. The number of people that were being trained at the time into squads, into guard duty squads, and you took it in rotation round. And you turn, and you mightn't have to do it again for another 4 weeks, you know. It would come round depending on the amount of people that were available to do guards. So it was very fair, in many ways it was. But that was the story of the stick man, and it's quite funny. It was.
And am I correct in thinking that you only did guard duties once?
Well, just once. I did a guard and never asked to do a guard again, no. But that was because they obviously decided that I would become an instructor on the staff, and because of that, I was excused guards.
Okay. Whilst you were training as well, while you were in your basic training, how did the lack of privacy affect you?
Oh, it didn't bother me at all. The different things that had to be done. The one great difficulty in the beginning of the recruit training was in Trevally in the morning, because there was maybe 30 odd chaps in a barrack room, and the toilets and the where you would shave and wash were very limited. So it meant what you had to do was you had to get up before the valley and get there 10 minutes between, so to be able to shave and wash before the rush came in. And of course you always got the ones who were a bit lackadaisical getting up. They followed on it at the rear, but if you wanted to get finished early and quickly, you had to get up before the valley. And that meant getting up 10 minutes to 6 in the morning and rushing through, washing and getting dressed and ready for the next part of the program.
And is that what you did?
Oh yes, I got up early so that I wouldn't have to rush when I was shaving.
How did the other men take it that you were being exempted from duties? Were you still in with the basic soldiers?
Oh yes, but they didn't mind that. They probably saw that I was keen to get on, and if you wanted to get on, you had to work for it. And, well, no, you got the odd one or two who maybe mumbled and grumbled a bit, you know, because you weren't doing a guard or that. But then, when they thought back and looked at it, they could see